Welcome to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues of fast-growing businesses. If you're a business owner or operator looking for practical tips and solutions to scaling your business in a sustainable manner, you're in the right place. Now here's your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre.
Hello, it's great to be with you today. I'm Alicia, and joining me from Hong Kong is Diana Wu David. Today's episode is brought to you by Equilibria Incorporated, and this season is all about profitable processes. And Diana is actually going to share with us her process for how we can actually raise our prices, or just looking at our pricing model in general. So Diana, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Alicia.
And Diana is a real trooper because it's evening my time, but she is up actually at 6 a.m. Hong Kong time. So I really appreciate it, Diana. We're actually going to talk about something that used to be an Achilles heel for me, to just be very honest, and that is pricing. Now, being that you've started two companies and you've worked for several other companies across the U.S., Europe, and Asia, you obviously know a thing or two about pricing, but can you first tell us a little bit more about your businesses and what your specialty is in?
So I would love to talk about pricing, and I think it's an Achilles heel for all of us. And over the years, I have even now found that I know intellectually that it's an important thing for us to do, but I still have to call one of my best friends and business advisors when I want to really raise prices and say, I always ask her, I'm thinking about $25,000 and it feels wrong. I'm sure it's in the back of many people's minds, and she'll say, oh, come on, get over yourself, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? So with that spirit in mind, let me tell you a little bit about my business and maybe a little bit about my past so that people who have slightly different businesses can understand that I know whereof I speak and that I have done a number of different things that might apply to them and help them. So my business now is really Sarana Labs, but it consists of preparing people for the future of work based on my speaking, based on my online courses on future-proofing, and based on my consulting to CEOs and boards and businesses in terms of gathering them together to prepare for the future and to even prepare themselves in terms of their behavior and the way that they work as a team. So that's my business now. And in the past, I've been in and out of small businesses that I started up myself, as well as large corporates. So my last large corporate job just before this was working for 10 years for Financial Times, where I was in charge of circulation across Asia, Pacific, and that is one of the reasons I know a lot about pricing, because I was in charge of pricing every year and customer segmentation and really the strategy to maximize revenues and profit for that business. And then in the past, I've been a management consultant. I have had my own company, again, in the United States, which was selling to high-end retail, Neiman Marcus and Bloomingdale's and the like. So I've had a long checkered past. And most of it's been around strategy and really running large businesses, or in my case, aspiring large businesses, in terms of strategy, sales, marketing, execution.
Well, that's awesome. And being that you have started several companies of your own, you've worked in several large organizations, you have a real sense of pricing and how it is directly linked to profitability, obviously. So if you had to describe pricing as a process, Diana, how would you do that in a step-by-step kind of format? And I know there are different angles that we can approach this from. Maybe we can start with the angle of just trying to figure out your pricing from the very beginning, whether it's for a product or for a service.
So I think for the pricing for your initial product, of course, it's easy to do market research to see what other people are providing and how your product fits into that niche. I am all about research in the initial stages before I launch a product. Even for the books that I've done, one of them was a children's book and is still 7 years later on, you know, tens of thousands of copies. And really, I attribute that not to my brilliant marketing, but really to filling a niche and a sort of what they call a job to be done. Clayton Christensen, who's a Harvard Business School professor, has written a lot on, rather than, for example, McDonald's selling milkshakes, they realized that a lot of people were going through the drive-through to get something quick that they could have in their car on their way to work to just fuel themselves. And so he realized that actually they could start selling breakfast smoothies in the morning or that kind of thing. So people were buying milkshakes and, you know, that's not good for you.
Right.
And that is like something that I think about when I think about my products or my service. What job is this doing for my customer? It's not just the product. It's really about the value that you're bringing to them. And you may have to change the product a bit to make that even more enhancing. It might be the process in their own business and how it fits into that. So that is the first step, I think, in terms of determining what it is you're selling. And it may not be exactly what you think you're selling. And then to see what people are paying to get that job done. And from there, you can have an array of pricing. So I'll give you an example of the job to be done from my own business at Financial Times, which was people read a newspaper. You know, I started there long enough ago that was really the main thing people were buying. But truly, they're trying to make better business decisions. So Financial Times is a business newspaper, and it is global, so it gives international perspective. And when you think about buying a newspaper, people think, I'm not going to pay more than $5 for a newspaper. You know, that's what we've been conditioned to do.
Right.
But when you talk to people about what using it to make better business decisions, in the same way that they use your podcast to make better business decisions, then all of a sudden it becomes this trusted information source, you know, on par with a research report you would pay $100 for, or a class that you would pay, you know, multiple thousands of dollars for potentially. And so, in fact, in my job there, one of the things that I tried to do was find new products that fulfilled the same need that people were willing to pay higher amounts of money for. And we launched a board training program where instead of paying $5, people will go through for 6 months and pay $10,000. Same assets on my side, the journalists, the people who have great ideas, they're up on things in terms of the latest research, and same audience even, but different packaging and different format. Mm. And different job to be done. So that, I think, is really important. Pricing, that's something that I think you can start out with mass pricing if that's your audience, but otherwise being able to start to test, to put a price on it and test what kind of response you get is something that is we, as small businesses in particular, we sometimes don't do that. We're like, I'm going to put a price on it, and that's going to be the price.
Right, right.
Right. And that, there's some authenticity, right? You don't want to go out with like 16 prices and, you know, all of a sudden the people who are your customers are talking to each other and you look like you're gouging them. But find one price. And in my experience, for people who are out there doing it online, there's something called A/B testing.
Yes.
Which is putting out two different versions, and it's not always about a price, but it's two different or three different versions of an email or, you know, an offer, and see what the response is. And so, in fact, you know, I wrote a book that is geared towards smaller entrepreneurs and people starting in that realm called Future Proof. And that is about minimum viable product for yourself, for your life. And it is about those taking those small bets and saying, okay, I am going to become a speaker and going out there to test your product. So when I became a speaker, it actually happened because of a TEDx. I was speaking in a corporate way, but not intentionally going out there to find places to speak. So I did a TEDx talk, and that was quite personal, actually. It wasn't about business so much, but it was about work-life balance and really cutting from the what we are all supposed to be to what we want to be. And then a lot of people asked me to speak. So I was speaking at different banks, and I was surprised. They were asking me about entrepreneurship. And after a while, I started putting prices onto that. I think I did two or three. And then I thought, wow, this seems to be something that people want, and you have to be intuitively tuned to that.
Right.
And so I put a price on that, and then people paid that. And then that's the other process, you know, the number one, find out the job to be done and what exactly you're fulfilling. Number two, start testing it and see what people are willing to pay for, you know, and maybe get some testimonials about that. And number three is to raise your prices until you reach a point where people really balk at it, and it will be higher than you think it is.
That is so,
so
true.
And so for my speaking, right, I did that, and I keep raising my prices, but then finding out what's going to be that next step. So once I got to about 5,000 US in a really slapdash way, I was like, okay, let's make it 10,000. And then by that time I had an agent and said, what's missing between 5 and 10 for my speaking? And she said, well, you need to have this, you know, marketing collateral, and maybe you should have a speaker reel. And before that, I had nothing. I had absolutely no webpage,
wow.
No nothing. So yeah, always trying to figure out what is that? That's sort of the fourth step. What is between A and B that would allow me to raise my price that next level, that next quantum leap?
So I agree with you, raising your price until they actually balk. But for people who are listening, they may be thinking to themselves, oh my goodness, I don't want to upset anyone. I may offend a customer that may never return to me. So there's some risk involved, obviously, with that. Can we talk about, so you walked us through those four main steps. Once you've tested and you find that maybe people are not balking at your price for your product or your service, at what point, Diana, does it make sense to say, okay, maybe now it's time to raise my pricing again? One thing that I've always said is, especially as companies are growing really fast and you have more demand than you can actually keep up with, raising your price is a surefire way to kind of stifle or choke that demand, but that may only be temporary. So can you kind of talk us through the next iteration, I guess, of you've set your initial pricing, now it's time to do a pricing refresh or revisit that pricing. So what does that look like?
So you're totally right. And I would say the caveat for speaking is that your customer is different all the time. So you're in a way having somebody buy from you, and it's not that common for, you know, some kind of conference or company to have you as a keynote every single year. So that, in that sense, it's a little easier. You don't have to worry about return customers. I would say that once you get to a point where you feel like you have raised your price and it's in a somewhat stable place and you don't feel like you're leaving a lot of money on the table, that segmenting your customers so that you understand that you're kind of getting everyone on that customer segmentation curve. So the parallel that they use in economics is the gym. And there's some people who will go all the time to the gym, and you want to get those people in, and then you want to get them into the most premium package. Or if it's not the gym, it's the telephone. You know, companies all over do this. So you figure out who those high price people are and what kind of value you can provide to them. And then you can think about maybe people who would like to not be able to afford that or not want to think about paying that or just want a piece of your service or product. And then so and so on down the line. As somebody who once launched a business selling to retailers with four colorways and I think 150 SKUs, I'm a big fan of simplicity. That was such a disaster, just mentally. So, I think that kind of always thinking about having a span, a customer segmentation for people, if that's the way that your business is important. And I suppose you can go up or down that curve in terms of what you provide and at what price. So the most obvious one is when I speak to large corporations, then I know that I can sell to them a consulting package that could be multiple countries and could include multiple teams, etc. And they just have so much more complexity in terms of their workforce planning, in terms of their strategies, in terms of the number of things I might need to do. The price will be high. The value will also be higher. Mm-hmm. And the complexity that I have to deal with and maybe new people I need to bring in will be higher versus an individual or even a single entrepreneur who says, I just read your future-proof book and I'm really inspired by it. My life is completely out of whack and I need to kind of get things back together. Can I have half a year of consulting with you or coaching with you? Those are two totally different prices and different value. It's one person. Mm-hmm. We can do it on Zoom. I don't have to get on a plane. Their business is generally far more simple. There aren't multiple stakeholders. So that's, I think, something to think about. Making sure that if you have not 150 SKUs, but if you have, enough space in your business to have different products at different points, then you can just maximize the penetration of your product or service. And it's also an optimum way to grow.
I think that's a really good idea. And what's funny about you saying that, I was actually interviewed on someone else's podcast earlier, and they asked me a question kind of in the same vein. And I said, one thing that I always do when I'm presenting proposal options is I always present at least three different options that kind of reach that span that you're talking about. So something kind of on the lower end, something mid-price, and then something on the higher end. And obviously, as you said, there's different levels of complexity involved in across those different options, as well as the value that's actually being provided at each of those levels. So one thing I always tell people also is, especially when they're providing a service, maybe one option that you can start offering is a do-it-yourself type option, where you can actually just do like phone coaching or some type of phone consultation. And you're just kind of guiding a person through a process that you might take them through if you were to work with them one-on-one individually on a project type basis. So that's just a little nugget that I like to share with people when I think so many of us, we think, and I think you alluded to this earlier, there's one price and it's going to stay this way and it's going to always be this way. But a lot of times you could be leaving money on the table because there are other ways that you can repackage what you do at different price points. Is that kind of
absolutely
what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Well, yes, I think I believe that. I think that that's a great way to test, because that's really trying to find out what your customer wants and letting them decide what price point they'd like to be at.
Yes.
And over time you might find that if everybody's picking a certain one, then that's feedback. That idea,
yes,
of testing and sort of really being intentional about the feedback and refining the process is important. And I totally agree that, also you're trying to get a better sense of what you can offer to a person. So that person,
yes,
might buy the middle package that you've provided to them, and they may actually upgrade over time, or they'll do that particular service from you and then they'll say, that was great, but I know that you have something even better.
Right.
It's like upgrading a car.
Exactly. Another example that comes to mind is a car wash. you can actually just kind of run your car through the car wash on your own, or you can actually have it personally detailed. And there's usually all of these different packages from going.
You're going for the, you know, the super fancy package.
Exactly. But the whole point is they aren't leaving any money on the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a, I think the other thing to think of psychologically, because I think that the biggest problem we have with pricing is often our mindset, and being able to say, look, if you want this, you can access it in all kinds of different ways. So for me, I think of, you know, some people write a book and they just feel excited that they wrote a book. But I feel like for my book, that is my lowest price offering. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, if you want to understand my thinking, then you can buy a book for whatever price it is, you know, $10 US, and that's fine. And if you need a little bit more help after that, then you can do a course where we collect a community of people to help each other. And because they're all putting in their time, you know, in a way it lowers the price. They're really helping each other as opposed to me helping them. And then you can have me help you, and then you can have me help your company. And I haven't gotten to the fly me in a private jet to your private island part of my business yet, but that's next for sure.
I love it. I love it. Okay. Now this, because this is the Business Infrastructure Show, we obviously talk about processes, but we also talk about the people and tools. And for those who are listening for the first time, business infrastructure is simply a system for how you link your people, your processes, and your tools in a profitable and sustainable way as your company is going through different growth spurts. So, Diana, we've talked about the pricing process. Can you also talk about some of the people and some of the different tools that we can leverage as we're setting a price for the first time or going through some type of a price hike? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We alluded to one of them in terms of A/B testing. And my business is largely uses sales and marketing via the internet. So if I want to sell more copies of my book or more copies of my course, then I send an email out, or I can do pricing offer. One way to test the price that I've found is to do a time limited offer. So for example, for my Future Proof course, it may be at $2,000 US, but I will try to do a short window for discounted offers. And I'll do that through the internet. I think in other businesses, you can do it, you know, in a store, it's like the 1 week sale or whatever it is, mm-hmm. Just to see how many people really value your product or service, but are maybe a little more sensitive to pricing, and how many people will sign up at a lower price, so that you might decide, now I have the gold-plated version, but maybe I'd like to do a shorter course or something that is just a 1 hour, you know, webinar, whatever it is. So testing that pricing via email. And in terms of the people, I'm a zealot in terms of where process meets people, because for my consulting business and for my management consulting background and almost everywhere I've been, it's where process and people meet that things fall apart. And right? Including myself.
Please explain.
Well, I think that truly, I started out my career in management consulting designing these beautiful processes. And then when you got them in the hands of people, people either didn't understand what the purpose was, and they didn't want to change their own process, or it wasn't explained properly, or it wasn't thought about very well. And so while that was for large corporations, you know, the reality is that there's a lot of process in your own small business that can be there. So the parallel would be when you install a new accounting software system and you managing your pricing in some accounting software can be very tricky. If you have your price to be at, you know, $10 for a day and then $20 for the next day, and the full price is $100, all of a sudden if the people on the back end are not actually changing the prices, or if you don't have a nice process for testing the prices,
yes,
then and kind of getting a sense of how that went and maybe why, that I think is where it breaks down, when you just sort of randomly put things out there and you're not thinking, oh yeah, sometimes for very small businesses, and I have been guilty of this, you can have moments where you try to do a high price and then you get it, and most of what you do is go, oh my God, that was awesome. You know, it's like, I got the private jet to the private island, and I would still do that. I wouldn't have a good process for that. but a lot of times you do it, but you don't think, wow, why did I get a higher price? What went into that product or even the sales process that allowed it to happen? And so that's why I think when you put out something that's a discount and you get 10 of the 100 people sign up, and you go through and reflect on some of your sales, first of all, ensuring you have the right billing system, ensuring you have all of the processes, the other back-end processes aligned to ensure that you fulfill that properly so that you're not, you know, billing people in different ways. And then really looking at it, and you can do it as simply as using an Excel spreadsheet, saying, this was my test. I had 1 week at this date for $10 and 10 people signed up. And then actually going out, if you have the opportunity to ask people, so why did you sign up? What made you sign up at this price and at this time? And people, depending on the quantity, often will tell you, oh, it just happened to be the timing. And so then you're looking at your data and thinking, maybe it was the price, but maybe people will pay more for something, or you know, in September, whatever it is, like really using your data to understand when people will pay and for what is something that's quite, you know, it's sort of a back of the envelope process for me in terms of the way I do it in my business now. For larger companies that are more data savvy, wow, they can say, like, you know, when I worked at Financial Times, I think we would say, okay, we know that entrepreneurs in Atlanta that have just had their coffee will pay more for our subscriptions than, you know, somebody else. Like, it's a lot of data over a 105-year-old company. And big companies are doing that increasingly. And I think small companies really need to start doing that more.
Yeah, more data mining. Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor. And when we come back, I want to ask you if there's any advice that you'd like to offer to our listeners in general as it relates to raising prices. Equilibria Inc. is an operations management consulting firm offering products and services to help fast-growing small businesses scale with less pain. Visit eqbsystems.com. for more information. And we're back with Diana Wu David. Now, Diana, you were describing to us the process for first initially setting a price and then kind of testing that and going through a price hiking process after that and then kind of going through that cycle all over again. Is there any general advice that you can offer to those who are listening right now who still may be a little hesitant to start raising their pricing?
Well, I think if you're really worried about raising your price, that you could start with a focus group of people in your potential segment. And an example of that would be if you have a consulting business, and I would make it not necessarily your existing customers, but I'm a huge fan of feedback. And you're thinking of launching a premium offering, you can gather together people to find out whether or not they'd be willing to pay a higher price or a different price if you're already quite high end and looking to go lower to capture more market share, and sit around and actually ask people, what would a product or service look like that was twice the price of my current product or service? Mm-hmm. The reality is that you may get feedback that where they say, oh, there's nothing you can do for me that's going to make you know, make me pay $100,000 instead of $50,000. Mm-hmm. Certainly, that's a possibility. So if you're really uncomfortable, you can gain a lot from in-person focus groups, you know, six people in your living room or more formally in your office, and you can even pay to have the facilitation done. I actually did that for one of my businesses, and it was hugely helpful. And I actually had a management consultant person who was interested in becoming an entrepreneur. It's my little secret tip. Come and run my focus group and actually put together what people, that was more of a what people wanted from the business, but you can certainly do that for pricing. And then my favorite, very low effort advice would be to just try it. Put up a web page, put up a price, do an email campaign, or depending on your business, you can do advertising or some Facebook ads and see if anybody will buy it. And so I do that more times than I'd care to admit. And it's something that people do when they launch their business or new businesses. It's what I did when I launched my course. I called it a beta course. We're just wrapping it up now. I thought, people keep telling me that they want more hand-holding. But are they really willing to pay for it? I don't know. Let me, you know, put up one web page with a sign-up sheet and see if people are willing to sign up and then also pay for it. And if I get two people, then I have my answer. If I get 100 people, then I, you know, either way, I have my answer. And I thought it was entirely possible that not a single person would sign up. And it was really, it's a really rough draft. And so we have 15 people signed up. They're all paying lots of money. I had so many people tell me nobody pays for online anything. There's no way. And so I really was pessimistic, but I thought I'm willing to deliver on this if enough people sign up. And frankly, if two people had signed up, I would have said, you know what? I really feel grateful that you are interested in this, but I don't think I'm going to do a 6-week course for you guys. Why don't we just do some one-on-one consulting? Then I don't have to do 40 plus hours of video and an entire curriculum.
Right.
Let's move it to something else. So that is a really simple way to really test whether or not you have something that can be offered at a certain price.
What I like about that idea is before you just delve right into developing, in that example, the online course, you first want to make sure that whether or not there's actually a market for it. And that's part of that research that you were talking about earlier, right? But I think so many of us, we just get into content development mode and we just start creating, and then there's crickets. There's no one who actually wants what we've worked so hard to create. So that research piece is really important.
Oh, yeah. And now, you know, fast forward to 2019, of course, we have Kickstarter and mm-hmm. Indiegogo, and basically you're getting people to sign up based on your idea. But I already told you that I had 150 SKUs. Like, I've gone down that, like, I have production in China and letters of credit, and, you know, that's my vision. There it is. Now I've got to sell it. Oh my God. So yes, that was my revelation, and that is why I'm here spreading the gospel of high prices and minimum viable product.
Duly noted. Now, you've mentioned some resources. You mentioned Clayton Christensen and how, you know, he's a Harvard professor who's done a lot of research in this area. You also mentioned A-B testing and using email to kind of facilitate that A-B testing. Are there any other resources that you can recommend? I definitely want you to talk a little bit more about your book as well as your TED Talk, but are there other resources that you can recommend where we can learn more about pricing strategies?
Yeah, I think that a lot of my background, my sort of top secret background is in economics. I did economics and I went to business school as well. And so I'm happy to pop a couple of notes into the show notes. I have to say that most of what I've used has been the resources that I have that I can give you are really fairly dry. And what I would boil it down to for those people in your audience who are who really want to get into the nitty-gritty of A-B testing and trying, I will pop in some interesting things into the show notes. Okay. And a lot of people's email services will even talk about that. There's sort of email scripts and different ways to approach it. So if you have a specific email provider, so I use, for instance, ActiveCampaign, and that does email campaigns that allows you to see what people are even clicking on in terms of the email. So that's sort of a whole level of, I guess, granularity that you can go to, whereby active campaigns can tell me, did that person click and what was the open rate? And once they got to the website, did they click open? And I know that their MailChimp is another email service provider that a lot of people use. So, you know, some of it is specific to your technology. And what I can provide is some of the pricing strategies that have been developed. But what I will leave you with in your business is really the idea of minimum viable product and trial and error. I know that sounds very unscientific, but that's certainly one of them. The other classic resource is The Lean Startup, which is a book by Eric Ries. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've talked about that on your show before. And he pioneered the idea, really, of not building it and waiting for them to come, but really trying to put in a very basic level of operations, even for starting your entire business, and then iterating from there based on what you can, what kind of feedback you get.
Awesome. Tell us more about your book.
So my book is like the Lean Startup for people.
Okay.
So a lot of the so a lot of the people and my background really has focused on that digital transformation and starting companies within corporates, starting companies outside of corporates. And based on that initial TED Talk and conversations with a lot of entrepreneurs and people who are in their sort of second act, I decided to do a book called Future Proof, which is reinventing work in the age of acceleration, which is really about looking at your life from a similar lens of innovation or a similar lens of sustainability. One of the things in the book is the minimum viable lifestyle. So really thinking about the overall costs of your lifestyle, because many people don't become an entrepreneur because they feel like they can't possibly leave their comfortable corporate job, or they can't possibly change the lifestyle that they have. But really taking it down to a sort of minimum aspect, and then being able to add opportunities on top of that and add your dreams on top of that is a concept that has allowed people to rethink their cost, their own cost structures as it relates to their work and their business. And a lot of it is for similar ideas to what we've just been talking about, which is really that the world is going very fast and you have to be adaptable. You have to have a higher adaptability quotient in addition to your IQ and your EQ. And you really have to think about what are some of the adjacent possibilities that I can go to. So if you're not owning your own business, what are the things that I can do in addition to my job at a company that I can explore, so that if what I'm selling or if what I'm the service or product that I'm offering becomes less interesting, then where can I go? And so it's a lot about what's the overall narrative, the reason, the why for my business or for my career, and how can I start to expand on that and perpetually test. So not a lot of always about pricing, but certainly about a similar concepts of really trying to adapt and grow on a pretty constant basis.
Diana, how can people get in touch with you?
I have a website, which is Diana Wu David, www.dianawudavid. And there are lots of blogs related to being adaptable and agility and working remotely and that kind of thing, a lot of future of work blogs and different podcasts, and my TED Talk is on there. And there's also something for people who are interested in future proofing, which is 11 questions about your future. And I feel super passionate about entrepreneurs in particular taking this, because it's a lot about the resources that you have in your life that will allow you to go into the future with the right, I guess, structure for your friends and your relationships, the right support for yourself. Mm-hmm. Understanding that you've thought about what will happen if your business or your career isn't as relevant, and how you can pivot to other things. So it's really questions to ask yourself about, am I ready? Am I ready for the future? And entrepreneurs are always so busy and so focused on their business. And it's so easy as an entrepreneur to forget about yourself. Mm-hmm. That future-proof checklist, I think, is really important for them.
Well, we will definitely make sure we include a link to that. Thank you so much for all of this pricing wisdom. It's much appreciated. Thank you for being on the show today. Now,
thanks
hang on.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So as a recap, Diana talked to us about her pricing process and how that immediately leads to profitability in your business. Specifically, she walked us through her pricing process, starting off with when you're trying to price a product or a service for the first time. She first recommended that we conduct our market research. It's important to determine what you're selling. What are people actually paying for it already, if you have competitors for your product or service? She then told us that we need to think about what is the actual value of the product or service that we are delivering in the marketplace. In other words, what job is this doing for your customer? She then told us that we really need to figure out how we frame or position our product or our service. That in and of itself has a very huge psychological component to pricing. And then fourth, she mentioned testing the response. So once you've set that price, get it out there, test it out, do some A/B testing. She even provided us with some email tools that we could use to conduct that type of testing. And once you've gone through that initial cycle, you can then start experimenting with raising your prices, and you'll know that you've reached a maximum value maybe once people start balking at your price. Once you segment your customers by price point and determine what value you can provide for them, that's another way of identifying not only additional price points for your product or service, but also figuring out just how much more you can raise your prices. And lastly, she mentioned that another factor in pricing is the complexity with which we deliver our product or our service. And once you've gone through that initial cycle, it really just kind of continues on until you reach a point where you're comfortable that you are indeed charging the right price for your product or service. She also mentioned the importance of making sure that your staff or your team is aligned with your pricing strategies. I thought that was really interesting, because a lot of times we're so excited, we do something spur of the moment, we may offer a discount, and then we forget to tell the people in accounting or the bookkeepers, the people who are actually working with our accounting software, and that can really lead to a big mess and lots of confusion. Another thing that I love that Diana spoke about was, if you're still having some hesitation or some level of uncomfortability around raising your pricing, start a focus group. It doesn't have to be anything formal. It can be something very small with a group of existing customers or clients that you trust, and just start asking them some questions to see, again, at what price point would they actually begin to balk. If you want to know more about how you can increase your pricing, or if you have questions and you would like to work with Diana directly, the best way to contact her is through her website. It's dianawoodavid.com. That's D like dog, I-A-N like Nancy, A-W-U, D like dog, A-V like Victor, I-D like dog.com. As a reminder, we will have links to all of the resources that Diana shared in the show notes. She's also going to send us over some more goodies that we can share at businessinfrastructure.tv. You'll also be able to see a video version of this interview on businessinfrastructure.tv. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, stay focused, be encouraged. This entrepreneurial journey is a marathon and not a sprint. Until the next time, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues with Alicia Butler-Pierre. If you like what you've heard, do us a favor and subscribe, leave a rating and review, and more importantly, share with your colleagues and team members who could benefit from the information. Join us next week for another episode of Business Infrastructure with Alicia Butler-Pierre.